welcome to the Community Rewatch Podcast. I'm Jen, your host through all things Greendale. But today we're not going to be talking about Community, but it is something very closely related to Community. One of our favorite shows around here. We're going to be talking about Mythic Quest, and I brought along some very special guests to talk about Mythic Quest. First up, you know her as our audio editor extraordinaire, lover of all things vegan cookie dough, mama of Snoop, who is now in our cover art for our podcast. It's Chels. Hi, Chels.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. I'm very excited for this conversation because, as we have talked about, we just love Mythic Quest. And obviously,
we love Mythic Quest.
We love the people who make Mythic Quest. So, for those of you who are looking for your community connection, you've got a couple. First of all, Megan Gans, whom we love and adore, co-showrunner, writer for Mythic Quest. And then also Danny Pudi, whom we also love and adore, plays a really fun, smarmy character on this show. And it's just so great to watch him do that. So speaking of people who work on Mythic Quest, we have two lovely human beings with us. So we have Ashley Birch, hello.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Oh, we're so excited to have you. And we have Charlotte Nickdow here, hello.
Hi, thank you so much for having us.
We literally tell people all the time that they need to watch Mythic Quest because—
All the time.
It has like the perfect blend of humor and heart. It's on Apple. So if you guys are already on there watching Ted Lasso, which you should be watching Ted Lasso too, you should watch.
You should be.
It's excellent.
It's so good.
Yeah, but it's really good.
I'm really excited because it was really funny though, because I watched Mythic Quest because some of the community podcasters had done like a Zoom call with Megan Gans. And at that time I felt really bad being like one of the people who was like, I haven't watched her new show yet, but they're all talking about how great it is. And they were just talking about the quarantine episode and they were like, oh, it was so good. We cried. And I was like, maybe I need to check out the show. And then I was like, okay, it's about video games, but like, I have no emotional attachment to video games, so how am I going to enjoy this? And I was like, I love this show so hard. Like,
I'm so glad.
Yeah, it's just such great characters, so many amazing female characters, which obviously is, well, wonderful. And a part of our brand around here is talking about the female characters. But I want to just kind of dive in a little bit and get to know you both and have you both tell us a little bit about your process for being hired for Mythic Quest. So how did that happen?
Shar, do you want to go first?
No, you should go first because you were there long before me.
Oh, okay. That's fair. So I just got cold called by Rob McElhenney, basically.
What?
Well, I got a call from my then writing agent, and he basically said, Rob McElhenney's making a show. It's a comedy about video games, and he wants to meet with you to be part of the writing staff. I'd never met Rob. I watched Always Sunny, but I didn't know any single person involved with the show whatsoever. So I was completely shocked. I remember where I was washing dishes at my mom's house and I just froze for a solid like 3 minutes. I had no idea what the hell was happening. It was really surreal. But apparently Megan and our associate producer, Brian, had found a web series that I did with my brother called Hey Ash, Whatcha Playin', which is all video game sketch comedy because I'm a lifelong gamer. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of how I got my start. I voice acting games. I've written for games, so I'm pretty well entrenched in the video
game. Ashley is a really big deal in the video game
She's
world.
A very big
I too
deal.
Was not. Yeah, like I wasn't. I also wasn't. Sorry to interrupt you you, but it's gonna happen. I didn't know very much about that world before starting on the show either, and like kind of knew that Ashley had been in that community for a while. And then we went to E3 just after we'd finished shooting the first season of the show. And she was basically getting mobbed. Like we were
Megan
like walking
said.
Through and we had people like behind us, like Ashley Birch. Yeah.
Only at games conventions though. Anywhere else I go.
What a cool place to be
a
massive mega star.
You are little gamers. I have 1,000 of them, but the 12 and 13 year old, they know who you are. Like, I see them watching and playing things and they know every little detail about who makes the games and who
see,
are the voices.
This is how you this is how you gain clout with them. You're like, oh, you know,
I'm totally gonna impress them.
I almost feel like I've used Ashley to gain clout with people more than almost anyone else on the show. And there's some cool people on the show, but like the people love you, and I don't blame them.
Oh, you,
it's kind of a big deal.
So sweet of his flattery.
I mean, Emmy winner.
Yes. More. She has a freaking Emmy.
This podcast is now about me.
It is. So we're renaming it the Ashley podcast.
I love it.
That's basically it. Rob has this sort of uncanny ability to just like find people, and he also is one of the things I really like about Rob is that he sort of just takes chances. Like, I hadn't ever been in an on-camera writer's room. I'd worked on Adventure Time as a writer, mm-hmm. and a couple of other animated shows. But he saw the sketch comedy and he knew that I wrote. So he's like, eh, fuck it. Just, whoops, there's the one.
It's okay.
bring her in, basically.
Yeah.
So then I became a writer on the show. And from there, auditioned for Rachel and got mm-hmm. cast. And that was kind of my trajectory.
Hey. Now Charlotte.
Well, and then I came in basically at that point. Like, I was still based in Australia. I mean, I guess I'm based in Australia again now too. but I had come to LA for like a quick visit. And truth be told, I wasn't actually getting any auditions. And it was like my last week of being in LA. And I got called in to audition for Mythic Quest. And basically I went in for my first audition, and then casting were like, wait, can you actually change your flight and stay another week so you can come in for a callback? And then wait, can you actually change your flight another week to stay? And I ended up staying, I think what ended up being 2 months longer than I had planned. And at the end of those 2 months, we filmed the pilot. But I met Ashley because in the beginning stages of the casting, I think they didn't really quite know where to put me. So I auditioned for a few different characters. So I actually met Ashley at a chemistry read where at the time I was reading for Dana. And I remember, and actually Jesse Ennis, who plays Joe in the show, was at that same chemistry read. And we all talk about like meeting each other in those reads and being like, oh, well, they're going to cast this actress. Like, she's amazing. And you and I clicked so quickly, Ashley.
We did. I remember it was so nice. Oh, go ahead.
You go.
Oh,
no,
boy.
You go.
Yeah, I remember. You were the first person I went in with. And I was like, yeah. Well, I mean, this seems
great. Can you hire us both so that we can keep hanging out all the time?
Yeah, can we do the show now? Because she's great. I'm going to brag about Charlotte a little bit too.
Talking actually. Even in the...
Oh, yeah, even in the lobby we did. That's true. We were just talking. I think you were telling me about the Australian voting system.
Yeah.
And I was like, why don't we do that here? I was getting all incensed.
Yeah.
Basically. I want to brag about Charlotte.
What
because...
a way to like open up a conversation.
Here's the beginning of our friendship.
What are you even remember? Talking about that for? It must have been election stuff. I have no idea. But Charlotte was so... it's so good in the show, as you know. Mm-hmm. And Poppy was such a difficult character for us to cast. I remember because we were casting as we were writing.
Yeah.
And for the audition, you know, you provide scenes for the actors to read. And they were auditioning Poppy after Poppy after Poppy. And they're like, this just isn't working. And I remember either Rob or David saying something like, when you have that many talented actors come in and no one fits, then it's, we need to change something, basically. Yeah. But every single time they brought someone in, the only person that they could think of that would work was Charlotte. And they felt sort of torn because Charlotte, they imagined Poppy as an older woman and they weren't sure, like, is she too young? And they kind of went back and forth, but then it just had to be Charlotte because she was so good and she brings so much to the role. So
that's nice.
It's true.
It's also like such an, again, it's like kind of that testament as well to what you were saying about Rob, where like he really, I mean, this is my first job working in Hollywood. Like, I had done some American stuff that had filmed in Australia, but like to be given like, and I love this. I mean, I love the show and I love the character, and to be like given this responsibility, like as my first ever gig out in like my real like LA first gig, I have so much gratitude for Rob just being like, yeah, let's just put this Australian girl out of nowhere, like in the show.
but it's so great, and it is such a testament because all of the actors on the show, there's just such natural chemistry, and like that's the thing that I'm most excited about in season two is seeing like, oh man, we haven't seen this pairing yet, or like this pairing, or
yeah,
these actors interacting.
But oh, like there's some good pairings in season two.
I'm very excited
too,
because I'm just like every like there's just such good rapport with all of you, and it's just such a testament to how talented and how great all of you are that like you can interchange all of these characters and it just works. Like you all have this amazing effortless.
And I also think chemistry. That part of what works with that is that we all truly really get along yeah. well, like yeah. everyone in the cast. And then, you know, the four of us women are super, super close. Mm-hmm. Like we, like Ashley and Jesse and Imani and I just today before signing on to this podcast have been messaging all morning. Like we have a text thread called well, it used to be my husband called it the perpetual conversation once, and then last year when we I think there was a day where like we were all having a pretty bad time and we're just like dumping in that thread like all day and then we started calling it the perpetual dump, which doesn't sound that pretty, but I still like it.
Oh, I love that. No, because it's so true. I have that group chat. Like I have that like group chat in my phone where I'm like, okay, guys, I need to talk about this, or like we need to vent about this. And it's the one chat that you go to that you're like, okay.
Oh yeah. You always have the thing where it's like, you have to take it to the group yeah. chat. Don't put it on the app or anything. You have yeah. to just
don't put it on social. Take it to the group chat. Like,
yes. Take it to the people who can handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Well, and I love that because that is one of the things that I think really does stand out when I watch shows, and it translates where you're like, I think that these people really all like each other. Like I get the vibe that they all connect, that they all have fun. And that's the thing that I can tell. And I love when I watch shows because especially like last year, you know, watching shows where you're like, I feel like there's joy here, and there was not, and there still is not enough some days of pure joy. Mm-hmm. That it just makes yeah. me so happy to like see that.
That was such a thing that got me through last year. And actually Community, I'm a massive Community fan. It's like a big enough Community fan that I was not able to be cool when I met Danny or Megan. Like Ashley will attest to this, like for basically the first year that I would spend any amount of time with Megan, it would just end up me being like, do you know how great this show is? Do you understand how much this show means to me? But yeah, Community was like the first show that we rewatched at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah, none of us have any chill around Danny either, no. I think. Everyone's just like, no. I compliment him way too much to the point that I think it's like kind of weird now, but he's just so good.
Like, that's the thing. He's so good.
We were
talking to Megan about that. I think
this sounds like pressure, but it's like, I was just going to say he's a flawless human being.
Oh. It's just like we were talking. I think we were talking over the summer to Megan about Mythic Quest, and Chelsea and I were like, you know, like after watching, like he's so great in Community as Abed. But like, you know, we started watching Mythic Quest and we're like, are we attracted to like smarmy version of like Danny Pudi's character? Like, yes, I feel like
a lot of people had that experience.
I think that's how we feel.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, he's the hot douchebag, yeah. but you love it.
Exactly. But like, yeah, no, I'm obviously like, and we've told Megan this too, and this will just be like a Megan Gans love fest too. Like we've loved Megan for so long that like one of
Megan's
my,
incredible.
She's amazing. And one of my favorite things when I legitimately am not joking, and I told her this, I did not look up who wrote an episode of Mythic Quest, but as I watched it, before I even saw the credit, I was like, this feels like a Megan Gans episode. And I looked it up and I was like, it is.
Wow.
It is. And it's where the road trip episode. And I was like, there's dialogue here that just feel like it feels Megan, and I can't explain why, but it just feels like her, and she's so great and wonderful. And she's awesome. Yes, we have like 10 years ago, if you would have told us like 10 years in the future, you'll be doing a podcast and also Megan Gans will make multiple appearances, Chelsea and I would have been like, wait, what?
I mean,
she's writing for the show we love. Are you serious?
And just continues to bring us another show of serotonin.
Good grief. Everyone on this show, we love you all. This is just going to be a love. We're just going to be like, we love every single human being who is part of the show. So, but I want to talk about, because you both, obviously, Ashley, you are a writer on the show and also you play Rachel. But I want to talk a little bit about, for both of you, what kind of initially drew you to your characters and what continues to draw you to them as actors, and Ashley, for you as a writer.
Sure.
Well, so actually my first audition for the show was for Poppy, and then I kind of like ended up going in for a bunch of other stuff and then coming back to Poppy. And I just remember throughout the time where I was reading other characters, I mean, it's hard not to love every single character. Yeah. And I feel like in light of that, it says a lot about my connection to Poppy, that even as I was going in for these other brilliantly written characters, I was just like, oh, I really, really hope that they bring me back to this first character. And I honestly, I'm not even totally sure how to put my finger on it, but I think something that I loved playing at the beginning and through to the second season as well was this sort of like unapologetic assholery that women often don't get to play. And look, I think that Poppy is a sympathetic character. Like, I think that especially because she's often an underdog, and also like no one would ever take me seriously as a threat. Like that there is an element to her that is like, you root for her. Mm-hmm. But in the playing of her, I was kind of given permission to just go like full bore, like not caring about other people's feelings, not being able to like, you know, connect to empathy really, and be completely unapologetic in her ambitiousness. And I think not so much in like the way that we're starting to see more women characters on TV that are ambitious, but this is a woman that's probably ambitious to a fault. And it's something that, you know, for me personally, I always feel like I have to keep a lid on that stuff. And also, I don't want to be an asshole. So, you know, it's not like I'm like, wow, I wish I could be as selfish as Poppy is. But it's so much fun to get to explore that in the show.
She's a character that advocates for herself. And I honestly think like showing that, you might call it assholery, it's like, oh, you get to see the strength in her character in a way, because you don't get to see that in a lot of women, because we're told to be meek and be polite.
Yes. Yeah. And I think like one of the things with the quarantine episode that was fun to explore was that sort of like vulnerability that she has in her personal life. But it also highlighted for me the fact that she doesn't question her own skill when it comes to the stuff that she's good at, mm-hmm. you know, like she knows that she is an out of this world programmer, and that never comes into question. She's mm-hmm. insecure in other ways, and there are other things where she's not really sure of herself, but that one thing, it's like she knows that she is better than everyone else in the mm-hmm. world. And that's like, man, I wish I could feel that way about something.
But I totally love it, because you think like there's so many times, and we talk about this even with Community a little bit, of like the male characters, and obviously you're like used to seeing like, oh, Ian has an ego, and like, but mm-hmm. but Poppy does too.
It's just, yeah,
it's depicted differently, but it's no less like, you know, the show's not saying, oh, one of them is like flawless and the yeah. other is, you know, the jerk.
And I think the big thing with Poppy's ego is just that it hasn't been allowed to run rampant the mm-hmm. way that Ian's has. And yeah. so you see, I actually always think of Ian and Poppy as having the same sized egos,
yes.
except one of them has been told his entire life that he's a genius and he should do whatever he wants to with his ego. And the other one has been told to pipe down a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that that's going to be something that's a bit fun about the second season, is you get to see what happens to someone with an ego that's been often told to be quiet, now being allowed to be loud.
Ooh. I'm excited.
Well said.
Nice.
Charlotte
Yay! Thanks for coming to Charlotte's TED Talk.
For people that are only listening, I'm doing a pretend hair flip right now.
Sometimes I forget
she
that this
has
is
hair
not
long
a
enough to hair flip, but it's black.
Oh, it's I'm just kind of like flicking over my shoulders.
Are you sure? Are you okay?
Ashley, what do you like about Rachel? What draws you to her as a character?
Well, I'm excited actually for in the second season is, well, Poppy is someone with ambition that has the talent to back it up. I think what we sort of explore in season two is Rachel has ambition and absolutely no talent. I think there's something kind of... What I like about her is that her heart is in the right place and she has really big dreams and she doesn't really have a lot to back it up.
Yeah.
Which I think is also sort of a fun flavor for a female character because, again, a lot of female characters, it's like we kind of don't allow them to be stupid or bad at things. Mm-hmm. Like often, I mean, especially I know the shows that I came up with, there was one female character. And so she had to be the smartest person in the room. She had to be keeping all the boys in line, blah, blah, blah. So we have so
Miami
many
female Granger effect.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Like the smartest kid in class.
Yeah.
And what's nice is that our smartest kid in class is a total asshole. And we have a person, Rachel, who thinks she's the smartest kid in class, and she very clearly isn't.
And that final scene of just mouthing like with Brad and Rachel, I was just like, oh my gosh. Yeah, like it looks really nice, but it's like, no, she didn't think that through.
Yeah. She really has a lot of grandiose ideas and really, really poor follow through.
Yeah.
And so I think what's sort of, you see that a little bit in the first season, but I think what's really fun is that we dive a lot more into that in the second season. And in particular, some of the new pairings that you see, she has a new pairing with another character and a lot of her arc comes out in those scenes. And it's like sort of a fun duo because she is being sort of confronted with the reality of her convictions and how she sort of talks a big talk and gets on a soapbox and in reality has actually no idea maybe what she's saying.
Very fun pairing. I've seen some of it and I was in stitches.
So the kind of nice thing about her is that she has that as her storyline, but then also this really sweet love story with Dana, played beautifully by Imani Hakim. And having Imani as a scene partner is the best. So that's another great part of playing my character is that I get to have so many scenes with Imani, who's one of the most delightful human beings you could ever hope to meet.
Aww. And such a talented actress. I was lucky enough to get to do a few scenes with her this season as well. And like every single one was a joy. She's amazing.
She's the best.
I love it. I love all of the women on the show. I mean, obviously, and we say that a lot. I'm like, it's not like I don't like the men, but like, you know, obviously, like, they're here, they're fun. They're great.
Kind of a show that is secretly about the women, though.
It really
like,
is.
I feel like it kind of like, it doesn't, it's not like in your face about it. And then you kind of get to the end of every episode and you're like, wow, the women really kicked ass in this episode.
Yes, and it's not like, you know, it is a show that like features so many different female characters. Like you're saying, both of your characters are so different and they're both allowed to be themselves fully. You know, and I love that all of the women on the show are so different, but they're fully allowed to be who they are. And whether that's like being super nerdy, super ambitious, being like, you know, having a good heart, but maybe not knowing exactly what to do with it, having this sweet persona, like having, you know, like all of these things that, you know, there is no one box. And I think that also is very clear to me when I watch shows with female characters like this, I immediately go, there are women in the writer's room. Like there are enough women in the writer's room. Like I can tell when a female character sometimes is being written by a man. And again, that's not to say that men cannot write female characters, but you get a different sense when there's a lot of women in a writer's room where you're like, yeah, this, I feel this. Like I feel all these women fully, that they're allowed to be fully who they are as characters, which I love. So again, We'll just keep saying it intermittently.
We love it.
Stop this podcast. Yeah, exactly. My thesis statement is.
And because all of these women are like so fully fleshed out characters, you can find something to connect with everything. And I love to see the relationship, particularly between Rachel and Dana, because again, I'm a very queer out person. And I'm like, oh, we actually get a nice little thing off to the side, a little budding relationship, maybe, and we get to follow something.
It's fun.
And it's not like stressful. No, totally.
What's really funny to me about I don't know if Megan's mentioned this, but I love that romance as well. And I love that it's so sweet and it's really, there's no fridging of gay characters. It's just a sweet budding romance. But what's so funny to me is that there's a contingent of our fan base that the actual written gay relationship is not enough for them, and they ship David and Brad.
Oh yes.
Hard.
I see that sometimes on Twitter. Funny. And
I ship David and Brad.
You have to.
I fully see it. It's just so funny because it's like, you have a gay relationship, though.
They're like, more. They need more.
Like, no, everyone is gay.
But also, that's sure. like the rule of the internet, right? Like, if there are two characters, like, they will ship it. Like, anyone will ship it on the internet.
You have to have the loving, sweet one. You have to have the antagonistic pair. It's only that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yes.
But no, are there any qualities that you like have brought to the characters yourself that you relate to, or how are you different from your characters?
Jesse said something this morning that I was like, that is such a good answer. It was more of an answer to the question of like, what qualities do you admire in your character? And it kind of actually reminded me of this is, I'm going off on such a tangent. This is not an answer to your question. But I remember when we were preparing for like the EPK or something last year, like to do some interviews about the characters. And one of the questions was like, it was kind of that question. What qualities do you have that are the same as your character? It was like, what did you bring to your character? And like every single time I get asked that, I always think like, well, actually Poppy and I have got the same physical form and voice.
I've had people answer similarly to me like, I look like them.
Yeah, we look really similar. I actually brought my own personal glasses to the character.
That is true. She did.
No, a serious answer is, well, I mean, a lot of my answers are kind of silly like that because, like, it's like she was an Australian when she was first written. And so I think, like, it was so much fun in those first few episodes of shooting season one. Firstly, everyone in the writer's room is extremely, like, welcoming and open to conversations about the characters, which is, like, such a dream. But I also feel like there was a lot that was kind of like, okay, well, here's the character and where we kind of want her to go. And now what are the parts of what you're doing in the performance that are really working? And then let's lean into that. So I think that Poppy probably became a lot more like goofy. I don't know, Ashley, you can tell me if this is true because you've been in it.
She is pretty goofy.
Because I don't know, I make weird sounds and I'm pretty like awkward moving. I just remember reading something in episode 7, maybe, when we're in the mocap studio of season 1. It just said, Poppy does a weird little dance. And I was like, who said this? Who wrote this?
No, definitely. I mean, that's kind of the thing. I mean, Charlotte does do weird dances, definitely. But also, definitely part of the writing process of, for especially I would think sitcoms in general, is that when you cast, you have some idea of what the character is, and then you cast, and then the actor brings something else out. Like, for example, Dana was much different before Imani was cast as her. And actually, Imani being cast as Dana, I think, really sort of saved that relationship, because on the page it was very different. And looking back, it's like, oh, that would not have worked. And
yeah,
Imani brought such like a sense of self and a groundedness and an inherent like likability and intelligence to Dana that it just made the relationship a lot more genuine and sweeter and, you know, sort of like,
you can 100% see why Rachel would fall in love with her.
Yeah.
And it's because like everyone, we're all falling in love with Imani.
Yeah, totally. So there definitely is a thing of like, oh, okay, when they do that thing, it's super funny. So let's just do more of that. So yeah, there's a lot. I mean, in season two, we thought a lot about like, who are the people that we cast? What do they bring out in the characters? And so how can we amplify what they do really well? So we found a lot of interesting things. Like, I won't say too much, but there's an episode that's all about Brad. And that is the episode that's made me compliment Danny like way too many times because he's so incredible in it. But that was born of knowing Danny, seeing what he brought in the first season, knowing what else he's capable of and leaning into who he is more so. And what he's you get so is this really episode. Great episode with an incredible performance from him. Mm. So I forgot your original question. But yes, we look at what the actor is bringing and we try to move toward their strengths because it just benefits everything and it makes writing.
And Danny's strength is that he's an amazing multi-dimensional actor. Yeah. And my strength is that I can do weird little dances.
Weird dances and Australian insults are important.
Thank you.
Love it. Love that so much. So obviously, like in season one, which obviously, again, keep watching Mythic Quest, watch season one before season two comes out. Obviously, both of your characters navigated some personal and work-related challenges. How did you see them grow within the first season? And I mean, if you want to tease a little bit about how we might see them grow.
I feel like for the first season, so much of Rachel's storyline is about Dana and about her, you know, having puppy love, kind of a mild obsession, very focused in on Dana. And so I think what's kind of cool about the second season is that we get to explore a little bit more about who Rachel and Dana are independent of each other. Mm. And then when we start to explore them as independent people, how that impacts or influences their relationship. Yeah. So what I think is kind of nice about the first season is that it sets up this nice chemistry between these two characters, this sort of mutual interest. And now going into the second season, we're going to get to see who they are independent of one another when they're interacting with other characters. And what that kind of brings out in each of them. So I'm really excited for people to see that.
You're so good at talking about stuff.
You're very kind.
I don't have an answer that is going to be as articulate as that. I feel like Poppy, like season one. Okay, well, the way that I have really thought about season one is that you come into Poppy's life and it's very clear what she needs, or at least what she thinks she needs, which is more power over this thing that she has essentially helped create from its very beginning. And so throughout season one, you see her journey to kind of getting this, what is more or less like a lifelong goal for her. And you also get to see the way that Poppy and Ian's friendship has grown over the years that they've been working together that we haven't seen, but then hits a few really important moments throughout season one in terms of like the ways that they support each other, the ways that they tear each other down, and then how that impacts like the way that they go about their own paths in their creativity and their career. And so I think what is really fun about season two is that now Poppy has got the thing that she always wanted. And so you kind of get to see the two things that I think are that I had the most fun with in season two are what happens when you hit success Like, what does that mean for your ambition? What does that mean for your creativity? But also, what happens when you're used to another person always having the last say and now they don't anymore? Mm-hmm. And how that affects her relationship with Ian, being on a bit more equal footing.
You said you weren't going to be as articulate.
Look, didn't do too badly, but it definitely was no Ashley Burgess.
That was beautifully said. My goodness. Like, I'm just like, and just keep talking, both flips. Of you. Whatever. Chelsea and I will just sit here. I'll just listen to you talk. You take over the podcast now. We're good. I don't have a later place to talk about it, but I briefly want to mention again, as I'm going to plug every time. Hey, watch Mythic Quest. Also, no one told me when I started watching Mythic Quest that there's going to be a standalone episode that will tie in thematically in a very deep emotional way.
Yeah,
that stars Jake Johnson and Kristen Milioti. So there you go, people. There's a bonus for you. But yeah, I was thinking of that while you were talking.
They're both so amazing in that episode.
Incredible. I watched that and I was crying.
That idea of success.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And I that coming back later in the season, I was thinking about like that idea was so brilliantly executed too, of that standalone story that tied so lovely into the thematic kind of Ian Poppy relationship, and that you know, that working relationship of, again, success and trusting your partner and what happens, how that can fracture.
I would say that is like that the second season really leans into that theme too. Would you agree, Ashley? Like the idea of success and different kinds of success, and I feel like almost every character has some experience of, you know, a different kind of success in the second season, and it impacts them all in sort of unexpected ways.
Yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah.
That was intentional. We meant that.
Yes,
totally. You know who said that to me? You know where I got that idea?
That theme was planned.
That was planned. That was an
arc. It wasn't even me that thought of that. Baden, my husband, said that to me. Because he lines all my lines with me very begrudgingly. He does not like to do it, but especially last year, he had to. I was like, who else am I going to sit with? Like, but yeah, he sort of reads the script, obviously. And he was the one that said that. He was like, oh, wow, this season really explores the ideas of success. I was like, okay.
I love that. I love that. Well, we talked a little bit earlier about the female characters on this show. So this year, unfortunately, obviously, because of a global pandemic, Comic-Con could not happen. Otherwise, we would have been there.
We would have.
Getting non-pandemic germs swaps with, you know, the thousands of people that
still
are
eating
there.
A lot of emergency tablets
and a lot of soft pretzels that we always ate when we were there. Sometimes I think about that. I'm like, oh man, I want a soft pretzel. So we know that through the SDCC at home kind of talk that we had this year, there was a panel specifically devoted to the women behind Mythic Quest, which I enjoyed. I thought that was really cool. It was really insightful to be able to hear about all the different women at different levels and different, you know, kind of expertise of like putting Mythic Quest together. So I was curious from both of your perspectives, when you consume media, what do you gravitate toward? What do you look for in terms of female representation on shows, on films, that kind of stuff?
I'm basically always looking for it. I sort of, I'm having an argument in my head with a friend that Charlotte and I both know. We always argue about this. But I'm kind of tired of, I don't really need all the white guys. Nothing against you. It's just you've had a long time.
Oh, yeah.
And I've sort of feel like
seen a lot of those stories.
Just a lot of you. So I'm mostly interested in stories that feature a diverse cast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I recently got super, super obsessed with The Expanse over the pandemic, and that has a really diverse cast and really, really amazing female characters.
I still haven't watched that. I should watch it. I
keep hearing about that.
But yeah, I mean, and it's one of those things too, actually, which is sort of amazing. I don't know how you feel about this, Charlotte, but I don't feel like I have to try that hard anymore to find it. Like, it's just sort of like whatever is the right. new hotness show yeah. seems to have BIPOC and female or LGBTQ or non-binary mm-hmm. folks in it. Like,
yeah.
And I think there's something in that that goes beyond, like, I think that if you're a skeptic, it's easy to be like, oh, everything's so PC. Everything mm-hmm. has to be, you know, inclusive now, which is like, what a weird thing to complain about.
But, I always say if you're complaining, you're yeah. probably an asshole.
Yes.
What is up with all but this I do inclusion? Think that,
I do think that, like, part of the reason that we're seeing so much more representation is because creators and the powers that be are realizing that there is just a treasure trove of stories that haven't been told yet. Yeah. Like if all you have to do is like look at a story from a slightly different perspective, like maybe we're not looking at this story from, you know, this white dude's perspective mm-hmm. anymore. More maybe it's from the perspective of his wife or his daughter or, you know, his non-binary friend mm-hmm. you know, and I feel like when you shift that perspective a little bit, there's so many exciting things to be found, and that's something that excites me.
Yeah.
I always say they realized making the Fast and the Furious movies that more than white people go and pay for things, because those casts are pretty culturally diverse, and across the world they make a bajillion dollars. And I'm like, oh, so people realized not white men have money?
Mm-hmm. What? But it's like, it's also one of those things that I've realized over, and I think it was, you know, I realized this before, I realized it before last year, but like, you know, I need to be more intentional about like things, because yes, like a lot of the media, thankfully in the last couple of years, like has become more diverse, but there's still a like, okay, like, am I actually actively seeking out stories that are from people who do not look like me, who did not grow up the same way that I did, who have different life experiences? And one of the things that I really was like, I want to intentionally do that more is over the last year, I was like, I want to read more books from women of color. Like, I want to like seek out these stories, because I think for a lot of us, our natural default, and not because we're intentionally doing it, is to just like be surrounded by things that like are comfortable. It's just kind of our default setting is like, oh, like you know, believe the way that I did. Yeah. You know, this, like you're familiar, like that kind of thing. But it is so wonderful, like to see so many different stories on TV, like in film, like, you know, and just in books and everything, that you can just go, oh, this is, you know, story. I love like Never Have I Ever. Like, that's one of my favorite comedies of the last like year. Oh, and I was like, so good. And like, I love like that story. And I love, you know, so many different things that have come out. And I think it is, you know, when I look for shows, like, I recommend Mythic Quest to people, because it's like, oh, look, this is, you know, not just in terms of the women being diverse culturally, but also just, like I said before, them being able to have different personalities, different ambitions, different flaws, different, you know, and all of that is celebrated. And, you know, there's not these archetypal things that, you know, it always falls into, like we were saying earlier, like, oh, the woman has to be like, this way, she has to keep the man in line and she has to be his moral compass, and like that's her role.
Yeah.
And then we need one woman who like does all this other stuff. And you know, I love seeing women be flawed too. Like that is.
And I think there's and I think even more so in season two, there's a bit more exploration of this. But something that I really like about Mythic Quest is that it doesn't feel like we're ticking boxes with the diversity. I think that sometimes shows can fall too far on the side of being like, look at all the different ethnicities we have, and each person is really their ethnicity.
Yeah.
And that's like the only thing that's important about them.
Yeah.
Or the opposite, which is sort of like being colorblind in the casting and not acknowledging that someone's ethnicity plays into who they are at all. Mm-hmm. And I feel like Mythic Quest does a really good job of being sort of authentic to, I mean, Ashley and I both have sort of, we're both mixed race, Asian women, and we have different experiences that inform who we are and how we go about the world. And I think that in Mythic Quest, especially in season two, there's like a bit of an exploration of that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I love that. Cause yeah, you can tell when shows just basically are like, you know, and I think it does come from like the place of obviously like the people who create the show, like that intentionality of like the people who are writing on the show, the people who are in the room, who are giving voices to characters, like the people all the way up top, all the way down, of just being intentional about like telling stories and like from, you know, women and characters who are diverse, but not doing it so that we can go, oh, look at how great we are. Look, do we get a gold star for doing this? It's like, no, you want to seek out like the, and I think that the, one of the best ways to put it, and I can't remember which episode it might've been when Megan Gans was on, of like, you know, the world on a show should reflect the world that we live in. And like, if it's just a bunch of white dudes on a show, like that's not reflecting, you know, a bunch of straight white dudes is not reflecting the world as we live in it. So like, we should be celebrating that both, you know, behind the scenes, in front of the camera, like we should be seeing these different stories that haven't had the opportunity to be told too. Like, cause that's just the reality of the way that, you know, things have been for so long, is that these stories deserve to be told. And it's much more than, you know, checking a box and saying, look, we did it. So Chelsea, you want to ask the next question?
Yes, I do. Because again, we talked a little bit earlier, but Ashley, you're kind of a big deal in the video game world. I know, back to the compliments. So yes. What was that like, bringing it to the writer's room and creating like an actual, oh, this is kind of what video gaming is like, culture in the show?
Initially, well, it was both extremely surreal and then also a huge relief that I had gaming experience, because I was terrified in the writer's room, because I was sitting across from Rob and David and Megan and people who I now know and love, but are all genius, hilarious writers. So I was shaking in my goddamn boots every day. Like, how did I get here? So games were a really nice fallback. I'm like, they can't fire me. I know about games. But it was also so, because like I said, I've been playing, there's literally a home movie of me as a toddler waddling around holding an NES controller that's not really connected to anything. But I've been into games before I was pre-verbal.
I want to see that.
Sounds pretty dang adorable.
It's pretty cool. Diaper just waddling around
holding an NES controller.
Love it.
But it's extremely surreal, because I was thinking the other day about how video games have gone through such weird growing pains. We've had really problematic, I don't even know what you call Gamergate, but problematic times. That, I mean, we still have a lot of problematic components of our industry. There's a whole debate at one point about whether or not video games were art, and I think back on that now, I'm like, oh,
oh my goodness. I think about that a lot, because I also teach at a university and teach kids at community art centers. Uh-huh. So whenever they talk about that debate, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna say it again, Jen, it's so fucking stupid. Video games are so art.
Stupid. It's really
of
stupid
course.
Literally, I bought like 5 Nintendo Switches last year for kids, because it helps them read.
Yeah. It doesn't make any, Roger Ebert actually came out with a whole article about how video games can't be art. He tried to justify
it
like that.
He tried so
it's
hard.
It's such a weird.
Why?
And it was very
what is the argument?
I don't even remember. It was basically, I think the fact that the
interact- They tied it to Columbine and like increased violence.
It can't be, Ashley, you might just say because it's interactive.
I think,
but
so.
Isn't that,
there's some sort of
so
idea about
there
like
interactive art exhibits in
it's making
you sleep no more. That can't be
It's really stupid. But that's the kind
so
of conversation.
Yeah.
That was like a big conversation in the games industry for a while.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
We did not have
long
any
time.
Cultural cachet for a very long time. And it was really like it really seemed like it was a sequestered hobby that only weird people did. And so if I went in a time machine and went back to myself when I was 10 and was like, there's going to be a sitcom with an Oscar winner and an extremely, extremely popular, many extremely, extremely popular comedy writers. And you're going to be in it and you're going to write for it. I would probably be like, how do you have a time machine? But I would also be like, there's no way that would ever have been, that's not going to happen. Yeah. So it's both extremely surreal, and I'm also so grateful to be a part of it because I've loved games for so long. How amazing is it to be in the writer's room for this show that's the first of its kind, yeah. you know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, it really, I think, that plus a lot of the games that have come out in recent years have put to bed that argument of our games art. But it's just like, it's such a testament to how prominent games are in our culture now that like mm-hmm. this show was made. Because mm-hmm. I'm sure people have tried to get a show like this made.
Oh, for sure.
You know, but it wasn't until now. And with Rob and Megan, who are so amazing, like to be able to actually get it to the public at large. It's just really, really surreal and cool as someone that's loved games her whole life.
I think it helps they put it in our pockets and then adults were also able to play mm-hmm, them totally. And be like, oh, wait, there's something here to this Candy Crush.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. Yeah.
My mom is like one of the most like obsessive gamers that I know. She has a PlayStation and she plays the one that she's really into at the moment. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a train game. It's like you build train tracks and then it's like a puzzle game.
That's so sweet.
But literally every single time I come over, I open the front door and she's like sitting in front of the TV in like gamer pose, like watching the playing this train game. And I'm like, I don't know anyone that plays games as much as
you. Last year, because you would text me and be like, what games can I get my mom? Because we're playing Animal Crossing yes. together. And we want to play more games together.
Yes.
So
you recommended Minecraft and we started playing it and could not figure it out. So you'll have to sat down to play and I don't understand it.
Yeah, we can do a let's play situation.
Oh
yes.
Perfect. I love it.
But no, I will brag. My nephew is amazing and he loves old games from when I was a kid. So like I just got him a Nintendo GameCube and we just got an N64, like a refurbished one. And he is having the time of his life playing these older games from whenever I was like 10 years old. Great. And he thinks I'm cool because I have the original Pokemon games, like all the cartridges and they still work.
That is cool. That's objectively cool.
That is. Do you want to ask the second part, Chelsea?
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, from your perspectives, have you looked at the real world of gaming differently since being in the show? This might be more complex.
I'll say
for Ashley.
That I definitely have, but that is mainly because I had little to no understanding of the gaming world before I started working on the show. And I think that, you know, one of the biggest things that I took away from a lot of my initial research was that the gaming world is so much more varied than I think I realized. I think I had a really limited understanding of what that community was. And one of the things that opened my eyes was just having the incredible resource that is Ashley Birch. Like we had so many conversations and we still do have so many conversations about the nuances of the gaming community. And I learned so much about, you know, all the different little corners of that world. And then I think the other part of that discovery that was really exciting was realizing that essentially what gaming is all the parts of acting that I love. Like this idea of getting to inhabit a character that is not who you are and live in a world that is not necessarily real, and make decisions and explore, and that's what I love about acting. And you can do it without having to sit through an hour of makeup.
I love it.
What was cool for me actually was the response from the games industry, because I really wanted it to feel authentic. I mean, everyone in the room did, but I was actually sort of pleasantly surprised by how authentic. There's the Caitlin McGee, who plays Sue, and is just what a treasure.
I love Sue.
Yes, she is incredible. A treasure.
She's so good.
So good. And
she's an outrageous actress.
Oh my God. I cannot believe every time she's on screen.
Yes.
The first moment of season 2, I came in, I was a little nervous because it was during the pandemic. Yeah. And Rob very sweetly was like walking me through the set, like, look, we're all good. Like, it's all your friends, basically. And the first thing I saw was Sue's coverage. She's talking to David, was like expounding upon some cool thing that he did. And every choice she was making was funny. She was just doing stuff with her teeth. Couldn't believe what he was saying. Her facial expressions. Oh my God. She's a fucking treasure. But anyway.
And I'll say, I was in that scene. I was meant to come in halfway through that scene. And it was basically my first real scene that I was shooting of the season. And I was also watching her performance and basically just being like, I don't want to go in there. Go into that scene. She's going to come in. Just let her do her thing. Why do I have to come in?
I love that.
She's great.
I'm so excited.
But her scene in the first season in the Girls Can Code episode where she's talking about her job as a community manager.
Yes.
Went viral among community managers. Like, a bunch, I saw a thread of community managers in games being like, it's too real. Like, oh my God, this is my life. And I had people text me, like, I had a creative director friend of mine text me and was like, when Ian threw a fit and knocked all that stuff off the desk, I was like, ooh, that's a bit too close to home. So it was really cool, but it also was sort of like a testament to the fact that games are just a creative process. They're a collaborative creative process. And at the end of the day, if you are doing something creative collaboratively, you're going to get the same sorts of problems and the same sorts of people. Because fundamentally, when you put creative people in a soup together, certain things just tend to happen.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a spicy soup.
It's going to be a spicy soup. Ooh. But yeah, that's sort of the thing is that I think a lot of people think about the video game world as being sort of this black box. And I think the kind of cool thing about Mythic Quest is that it shows that, like, no, they're just creative weirdos like any other creative weirdos that you know.
Yeah.
They just happen to be making an MMO and not a movie.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's so fun to watch those personalities. Like, just from the very first episode, you get, like, established exactly, like, all of the personalities, like, in these creative teams. And you're like, I know that person. Like, even though I don't work in like a video game industry, I was like, I know that person, like, very clearly, because I know creatives. And it's like,
and that's why I think the show works beyond just like, if you, you know, if you're a fan of video games, there's so much in it that's sort of these fun little Easter eggs, but it's also kind of like just a little bit just about toxic workplaces.
Yeah.
It really is.
It really is. But I will say, like, one of the coolest things about Mythic Quest is, and that was talked about in that panel, was the incorporation of the video game elements. That's what makes this show so cool to me too. Like, obviously it's such a great show, but like, that is just so awesome to be able to be like, oh, I can watch them like develop the video game, watch them play the video game. I just think that that's awesome. I think that's really cool because that is very unique, and I don't know any other shows that are doing that. It's awesome. So
it's because they're not
because they're not. But we talked about this a little bit, but you all did a quarantine episode, and I have told people that this is about one of the only episodes of television about the pandemic that I will allow to exist, because
it's the only pandemic everyone anything allowed to like, exist. Hey,
so obviously this was shot in quarantine, so I wanted to hear a little bit from both of you about what was it like to film the quarantine episode? What made things either more difficult than a traditional shoot, or was there anything that you found unique, like in a positive or cool way?
The first thing I'm going to say is Charlotte and Nick Dow in that episode.
My goodness. Is
goddamn chef's kiss. Okay. It's unreal.
Let me read you directly for those of you who are listening to this.
Yes.
And don't know that we have, like, I have notes that I read. In parentheses, Charlotte, your scene toward the end made us cry! Exclamation. Because I cannot watch.
Do you want to read the text where I said I cried, like, right before recording?
She's like, I cried while watching. No, because it was like,
I feel like I got a lot of messages after that episode came out from people who were watching who watched it being like, you made me cry. And I never quite know how to respond to that, because I know it's like, yes, it is nice to connect to a character's experience. But I'm also like, sorry.
No, never be sorry. It's a good thing.
We talked about it in a very, you know, we talked to Megan a little bit about this, because as obviously the female co-showrunner, sometimes she's told us that, you know, people assume, oh, you must relate to Poppy because, you know, she's the woman and you're the woman. And right. She's like, I didn't, you know, I never really connected to Poppy until like this quarantine episode. And then I really did connect with her and her, you know, experience. And I think that that was what was so brilliant about this and about like Poppy's story in this is that sense of, you know, all of us were feeling and still do feel like, you know, we were designed, like we were made to be with other people. Like, even though I'm an introvert and I love my own space, like I miss hugging people. I miss being around people. And for a character whose like friendships are forged at work at the office, like watching Poppy like unravel that way was so like, it hit me so hard. Like I miss people too. Like, and I need people, even though I don't want to admit it sometimes. So like that feeling.
Yeah. And was I think that's definitely up. Poppy as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That idea of like, you know, if you're in a workplace where you can be, basically she can be in her office all the time and probably is, and gets her, you know, fix of being around people that way. And then to not have the opportunity to do that anymore, there's a vulnerability that comes up. And I also, one of the things that I really related to about her experience was this idea of having to stop rushing, like having to, you know, the thing in the end that breaks her is that she finishes her work. And then it's like, what do I do now? Who am I when I'm not doing this? And I think for those of us that have been lucky enough not to be touched by the virus specifically, I think that is one of the things that has been the biggest struggle, is this idea of we live in this world where rushing around and constantly working is kind of a virtue. And then to have that taken away and to have to examine what is left when it's gone is super scary.
Yeah. I think that's a huge, it's definitely been a huge part of my experience as well. I mean, the perpetual dump has talked a lot about that particular struggle.
Yeah.
And actually in terms of filming the episode itself, it started as sort of, I felt sort of panicked because of the whiplash of going from, we were in the first week of production when everything shut down. So we were gearing up to finish season two, to like start filming.
Yeah, we can really track the pandemic like beginning through that week.
Yeah, because
it was like Monday, I was still hugging people on our first day back.
And then it started to get kind of increasingly scary. We were like,
everyone stay away from me.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And so it was this thing of like, everyone was sort of preparing mentally, like, okay, we're going to go into the sprint of filming. And then it stopped. And then everyone was dealing with the very abrupt stop of work and people and everything. And then for me, at least, the quarantine episode was so welcome, but then also all of a sudden that sort of like juice that you have to summon to be able to film, it was sort of difficult at first because I was emotional and confused and I, you know, no one could come over. So I was like trying to fit. Actually, originally I was going to wear, I had cut my hair short, obviously, from the first season, and we had fitted a wig for myself to match my hair from season one with the swoop and everything, a different color. And so I was sent the wig and I was like fitting my own wig on and doing my own makeup and trying to set up my room and the lighting. And I was getting really overwhelmed. And then actually, I think I was pretty nervous until Rob called me the morning that I was supposed to film my scenes with Imani and Craig, who plays Lou. And he was like, what does your hair look like right now? And I was like, and I had put the wig on. So I was like, well, it's got a wig on it. And he was like, take off the wig. And I was FaceTiming with him. So I took the wig off and I just went like this. And he was like, okay, we're just going to do that. And then he'd rewritten a scene.
Oh, yeah.
Where I couldn't have cut my hair and whatever. And for some reason, that felt so true to me and the experience and everything. And it also took away the
stress. And for so many people as well, hair was such a huge, like, I'm talking as though it's in the past because I've come back to Australia and it's very, very different here. I understand that everyone is still in it at the moment, but I know that hair has been such a huge thing.
I've cut my own hair a few times.
Yeah, I've learned to cut hair. I cut my partner's hair. That's really, I never thought it's yeah, same. Like, I shaved my sides. Like, it's a weird time, but There was something about that that I was like, this is also the stress of not having to make my wig look good and, and make our hair lead, our hair department lead proud. But it was sort of like, yeah, this is just us as friends doing this thing together. And it also sort of kind of harkened back to my more like sketch guerrilla filmmaking days where I was like, this is my bread and butter. This isn't in my blood, like doing this kind of stuff.
Yes. So it went did have that feeling of like, not guerrilla filmmaking so much, but like, and it was way, way more professional than like a class project, but it had that same energy, you know, of where everyone was like, we got to pitch in. Like everybody, I personally grew such an appreciation for everybody else's jobs. Like speaking of hair and makeup, like I feel so sorry for our incredible hair and makeup artists that were like trying to explain to me how to do my hair and makeup. And I was just like, I can't get it the way that you make it look. It's a very good job security for, for everyone.
Really solidified
how actors try to do their job for them.
Yes. Well, and it was so cool. I think I watched, I don't remember what website it was, but like had done like a little bit of a, here's basically how we kind of did it behind the scenes. And I was like, that is just like everyone setting up their own lighting and their own sound and doing their hair and makeup. And I was like, that is so, it was so impressive to me that like, that was a thing, but like that you all were so game and that like everything, like in the end, the product, like the final product is so beautiful and so wonderful and necessary. I feel like that was the thing that I took away, was that a lot of shows in the beginning of, you know, once things started kind of picking back up again, are making, you know, here's this quarantine episode, here's this episode about COVID. And I sometimes I watch them and I'm like, but was this necessary? But with Mythic Quest, it felt like this is necessary. This is adding to, not saying like, oh, we need to make an episode because this is the time period that we're in and we need to comment on it. But like that idea of personal connection, human connection, how everyone is dealing, because all the characters deal with things differently. And that's very true to how different people dealt with quarantine differently and still deal with the pandemic differently. And there are people.
It's such a lovely thing to say.
Oh, it is.
That means a lot. Because I feel like when we were working on it, that was one of the things that we were all hoping to be able to make, is something that would be meaningful.
And it is.
So thank you.
It is. And I love that the mess, like, and I mean, one of the most important things I feel like I ever heard from a friend, and this is a very loving friend whom I've repeated this, this advice to other people for, is I like had a panic attack, was on the verge of tears one time. And I was like, she's like, are you okay? Like, what's going, you know, what's going on? And I was like, no, I'm okay. I'm okay. And she like looked me dead in the eye and was like, you're not okay, but you will be. And it's not okay, but it will be. And I felt like watching the quarantine episode, especially with Poppy's story, like that was such an important thing for people to hear. Like, it's okay that you're not okay right now. Like it's honestly okay if you like are really struggling, like that is okay. And it will not always be like this, but it's okay to sit in that feeling, however you're feeling, and giving that validation. So yes, 100%. Like that was so important to me to watch. I know for Chelsea too, like it was just such a necessary feeling. And it really, like the reason it hit home so emotionally is because of that, because I was like, I get this feeling. And thank you for like, you know, telling me like, it's okay that you're not okay right now, but like, you know, we will be okay. But right now it's okay to be sad and to cry.
I hope that that's something that we all carry out of this time as well. Like I really have hope that when we all emerge from this, everybody's going to have so much more space and understanding for not being okay themselves, and also for other people sometimes not being okay. I already can feel how much more space I have to hold for myself not being okay, but also for, I see in my friends and my family, and the way that people just feel more able to be honest about that in a way that we never were before. I think that's at least one good thing that might come out of all of this.
Yeah, I would agree.
I do. And I do want to add on that I do love that the episode, it dealt with the idea of loneliness and how you're dealing with that and not being okay. But it also, like, Ashley, your storyline gave you the, you still have your friends, you still have community and a way to have fun in this weird, silly world. So it's a great balance.
It was.
I mean, the Rube Goldberg.
Oh my gosh.
It's so funny because the you know, we had no idea. You just get a machine and you're like, I just need to
find a way to not mess this up.
And I have to frame it right and get it, you know, so you're not thinking about it. But when I saw it put together, I mean, I cried when Charlotte cried.
Yes.
I cried almost the second I saw you in the episode. I was like, I know what's coming and I'm not ready. But the Rube Goldberg, especially with the music, it's just so triumphant.
It's so hard not to cheer. You just want to scream.
Yeah, it really, it's so good.
Yes, it has this beautiful epic feel. Yes. Like, I felt like I was watching one of those 80s three-hour epics, and I'm like, this is like the moment.
I was Bob, Megan, and David wrote that episode, and they just crushed
beautiful.
It.
Beautiful. I was so excited, because you're like, you're like, oh my gosh, are they going to make it? Are they going to do it? Come on, I believe it. Because it is that, like, you know, there is that silliness and that connection. And I love that there was also the depiction of like, okay, like a working mom whose kids are now home. Like that, yes. I know so many people who like their kids are home and they're like, so what's quarantine like for you? Cause some of my best friends have like now 3-year-olds and they were 2 during the pandemic. And I'm like, probably a lot different than it is for you right now, isn't it?
Yeah.
What's it like?
And Jen knows I babysit because my sister-in-law is a nurse. So luckily she's vaccinated everything, but I hang out with a 5-year-old all the time because he has nowhere else to go. And again, that's why I know so much about video games now.
So it was so nice to see all of those different depictions, like to have that emotional kind of core of, okay, like this idea of loneliness, but then to also have like the, hey, you know, you're seeing one of your close friends or you're seeing your coworkers and, you know, you're trying to get them to get onto Zoom calls. Can you figure out how to work the thing? Like, and there was all of these different, of course, this is how all of these characters, and I think that was what was so fun too, watching. I'm like, this is exactly how all of these characters would be doing during quarantine.
The way I identified with Joe yelling just instructions at people is me trying to get people on a podcast.
She's dying where she just gives up. She just
she's an actual genius.
I remember seeing her in Life of the Party and I'm like, who is this person? And then she was on Mythic Quest. I'm like, oh my goodness. And again, a beautiful, perfect ensemble.
She is a star.
She's incredible.
And like, I sneak on set when she's shooting scenes that I'm not in just to watch her do her thing because she's amazing.
Also, like, the sweetest human you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
Literally supportive. So, like, an angel.
Oh, yeah. It's always the nice people who are good at playing mean.
Right. But yeah, that sequence at the end, it was just like, it was the perfect coda because, again, that moment, and I know that they talked, you know, I feel like there was interviews about how that was the Ian and Poppy scene was shot. And like, I was just like, I literally was just an emotional wreck. I'm like, I'm just going to keep sobbing on the floor. That's fine. And this is so important and it's okay. And I was like, I'm glad that Mythic Quest was like, okay, so we're going to have an upswing with like this lovely team building because that was
leave you feeling good.
Yeah. Well, and it was what, you know, it was so nice to see like, oh, the team, like, and have a success. And it was so fun. And you're just like literally standing there cheering, like, oh my gosh, they did it. This is amazing. And it turned out like so beyond cool. Like, I was just so impressed with watching that.
We're really proud of it.
And it's the whole episode, honestly. And, you know, I'll say it again, y'all should be incredibly proud of it from start to finish because it was just a beautiful and it was an important, necessary episode for the show and for TV. So
thank you.
So we talked a little bit, but without giving too much away, is there anything else that you can tease of what we can expect for season 2 of Mythic Quest, which premieres on May 7th?
It's gonna be really good and really funny.
Yeah.
I like that tease.
We're in it.
Okay.
I was worried.
All right.
There are so many things that I do want to tease, and I'm scared that it would be too teasy.
I also am worried about that.
That's fine.
I don't want to pull a Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah. New pairings are very fun. And more of the stuff that you liked and some stuff you're not expecting.
Yes. There'll be a lot of really fun unexpectedness. If you liked the ways that in season 1, you were sometimes given something that you didn't see coming, then you will like season 2 as well.
There's the pull quote, everyone. Go ahead, Jess.
My turn. And so is there anything you hope people take away after watching Mythic Quest, like either the first season or the quarantine or even this new season?
I mean, I hope you enjoy it, mostly.
Yeah, honestly, I was going to say the same thing. Like, I know, I mean, I think we've talked a lot about, like, the ways that it is, you know, I mean, I hope this doesn't sound too up myself, but, like, it's an important show for a lot of reasons. But I also think that it's, like, it's the kind of comedy that I love, where you watch it to escape a little, you feel like you're hanging out with your friends. It's for me, it's always felt not exactly, but a lot like community in that way, where, you know, there's a satisfied feeling that you have at the end of each episode that I hope is what people take away from our show too.
Yeah. Yay. I love that. Shiloh, we need to have you back for Community. Like,
we're gonna get you on the Community.
Have you talked about an episode of Community too?
Me and my husband. He's like a diehard fan, and he's like, Abed is probably his favorite character in existence, and he literally cannot talk to Danny Pudi. Like,
that's fair. The man has the range.
He just can't talk to him. And like, so we've like been catching up on FaceTime a little bit since I got back to Australia, and it's like I'll always be like, hey, Dan, say hi to Daddy, and Baden would just be like.
It is the episode of Community where Troy is LeVar Burton.
Yes, it is literally that.
I love it so much. Yeah, we're definitely gonna have you both back, so because that would be so much fun. But did you either of you have anything to add, Chelsea? Did you have anything you'd like to add before we wrap up?
Just that I love and adore this show. It is a serotonin boost. I put it on whenever I'm just doing little things. I'll be cooking and I'll just put it on my phone and watch it while I'm.
That's the biggest compliment, I think, honestly.
Yes.
While I'm doing other stuff, show. I know that sounds sarcastic, but like
no,
like, it feels like that show for me, and I love
yes.
it.
Oh yeah, no, I feel like that's the time when I can relax and do something and then just have something comforting, like almost like you're hanging out with your friends.
Oh,
in this time.
Yay! That makes me
yay!
Yes.
I love it. It's so great. Yeah, no, I put it on because I was like, you know what? I think I'm going to do a rewatch of before this. I was like, I think I'm going to rewatch like Mythic Quest. I'll probably rewatch Ted Lasso. And like, it was one of those things where I'm like, I'm going to like clean and like watch it. And then inevitably it hit the point where I was like, just had stopped cleaning and was like, I'm just going to sit down and watch this episode. I'll rewatch this. But yeah, no, seriously, everyone.
I love that.
This has been so much fun having you both. I'm so
thanks
glad.
Thanks for having us.
This has been so fun.
We love the show. We love you both. We love everyone who's part
of
it.
I love you guys.
Aw, thank you.
I'm just going to do a little Annie Edison. Aw. well, we have our last two questions that we always like to ask here. So our second to last question is, what is one piece of media? It can be a book, a TV show, a film, a podcast, etc., from either a Black or Indigenous or person of color creator and or featuring Black men and women, Indigenous people or people of color that you would like to encourage our listeners to consume this week?
Go ahead.
No, you go.
I'm a huge fan of Octavia Butler, who is a Black female sci-fi writer. And I read her Xenogenesis series a couple years ago, but this year I read Parable of the Sower, and it's so good. So I would highly recommend Parable of the Sower.
Nice.
Cool. I, last year, probably towards the beginning of last year, got completely obsessed with Rami, the TV series, which is like an unbelievable show. Like there are two seasons of it, and I feel like it's gotten like a good amount of attention, but in my opinion, not enough. Yeah. It's truly a genius exploration of like identity as non-white person generally, but specifically he's a is he Egyptian Muslim? See, I should know this, but yeah, it's a really great show.
Yeah. Ooh, nice. Chels, go ahead, because I got to grab the book from my shelf that I'm recommending.
Perfect, because I got a lot of ramping up for this one. So the BAFTA nominations were this week, and I like that they did a lot of juried things because last year it was all white nominees. And so they were making a concentrated effort. And I think that means they got to be a little bit more equitable and have an actual meritocracy. And one film that I really love that got a bunch of nominations was this film called Rocks. It's a beautiful coming of age film about this young Black girl and how she has to like navigate life and take care of her family after her mom abandons them. And it sounds like kind of dark the way I just described it, but it is just this beautiful little tale that I'm so glad got some like spotlight, because in a traditional year, awards are stupid, but they're less stupid when they go to the right people. That's the Ron Swanson. And I'm like,
yeah, oh. I was gonna say, is that Parks and Rec?
But no, I'm like, oh, this is so nice that this tiny little film that's available on Netflix over here in the States, it's getting some love and recognition that otherwise another boring white thing would get. Because there's way too many boring white things that always get nominated. So I'm like, oh, I really like that they got their time in the sun, and hopefully all these people will be booked and busy and getting paid to do other wonderful things. So I'm going to recommend Rocks on Netflix.
Nice. Yeah, I didn't know that was on Netflix, but I saw...
It is on Netflix.
Yeah, I saw award noms, so very exciting. So I am recommending a book that I flew through, which is so great. It's Amber Ruffin and Lacey Lamar's book, You'll Never Believe What Happened to Lacey. Crazy stories about racism. And I will read Busy Phillips's like quote about it, because I feel like it perfectly sums up exactly how I felt reading this book, which is, the stories are delivered with the humor and horror they deserve. You will laugh, you will be enraged. And if you're a white person, you will understand more than you did before about the truth of being Black in America, even if you thought you understood a lot already. So this whole book is, they co-wrote it together, but it's basically a lot of Lacey's stories. Amber shares some like a little, you know, some stories, but she shares some positive anecdotes too, to Lacey's stories. And you literally will basically be like, I believe that this happened. And you're just like, oh my gosh, I cannot stop reading this book. It is exactly what Busy Phillips described. So I highly recommend it. It's pretty short too. So it's only like 200 pages. So I flew through it in like 24 hours. So nice. Yes. But this has been such an absolute pleasure to have both of you on and to get to know you. And I'm just so glad that we got to do this. And Chels, as always, it's so lovely to have you.
I'm around.
You're here. So I want to give everyone else who's listening the chance to find, follow you, anything that you would like to promote. So
Ashley? Well, our show is coming out on May 7th.
May 7th on Apple TV Plus.
And it's you can get a subscription or you can like buy a new iPhone or an iPad and get Apple TV free for like a year.
Actually, I'm not sure. Cut this if it's not true, but I think that they also do like a 2-week free trial or something like that.
I think there is a free trial subscription.
Yeah. And then you'll stay for Ted Lasso.
Yeah.
You'll stay for all of that. Start with Mythic Quest and
Stay for Ted Lasso, Central Park.
Watch Dickinson too. Dickinson is pretty good. Yeah. I mean,
like, yeah. There's some really great shows on there. Oh, yeah. Loved on the Rocks. Love me a bit of Bill Murray, Rashida Jones.
Oh, yes. God bless. So, but yes, so. Where can people find you on the interwebs if they would like to find and follow your stuff?
I'm on Instagram at Charlotte Nickdow, which, you know, maybe you'll spell my name in the description and that will be how people will know how to spell it.
I'll link to everything in the description.
I'm on Twitter at Ashley_Birch, spelled opposite of the way you think that it would be spelled, and Instagram at Ashley Birch.
Yes, your whole name is spelled opposite of the way.
Yeah, I think it doesn't make any sense.
I really like how it is spelled.
I do love that.
Oh, thanks.
It's nice.
It is. Tell us, where can people find the million and one things you're doing these days?
Okay, we can do this. I'm Chell725 on Twitter and Letterboxd, where I put really silly reviews, nothing serious. And then I have the Cinema Gals podcast, where we recently just dropped our Paul Feig, Melissa McCarthy Love Fest, where we talked about their collaborations, and we have a lot of fun stuff coming up. Then we have Those Gals Have Moxie, which is just chaos. It's like if our group chat came to life, and it's a lot of fun right now because we enjoyed WandaVision and a bunch of
good. So good.
It was good.
Yes. So those are, Jen, did I get all my things? I don't remember.
That sounds right. Yeah, I think that was it. Sure. I think that's it. That sounds about right. You can follow us on Twitter. We are at COMM Rewatch Pod. You can follow us on Instagram at Community Rewatch. Check out our pinned tweet, which is always our pinned tweet. And donate, if you're able, to the Loveland Therapy Fund for Black women and girls, because mental health is super important and everyone deserves to have access. And what we love about the Loveland Foundation is that it connects Black patients with Black therapists. And that's very important. So do that if you're able. And obviously, since this is a Community Rewatch podcast, the last thing we always like to ask is, what's one thing you're currently rewatching or something that you enjoy rewatching?
Ooh. I genuinely, as I said earlier, I rewatch Community a lot. I'm not actually rewatching anything. Oh, you know what? I am rewatching something, and it is not a typical rewatch show. I'm rewatching Succession because I think it's a great show, and my husband hasn't seen it yet, so now I'm watching it with him. It's not really a comfort watch, though. Yeah. It's kind of
not a warm and fuzzy kind of show, but
no.
I just did almost a back-to-back rewatch of New Girl because I rewatched it, and then my
heart. God, I love
like
New
every
Girl.
Every time Ashley checked into the group chat, she was like, "I'm up to this episode of New Girl."
That sounds like me in literally every group chat.
That
I'm like, Chelsea can attest. I am always rewatching New Girl.
It's so good, and it's so good that my partner like started kind of like while he was washing dishes or just doing other stuff, he would kind of like come in and then he would sit down. And he came in like maybe middle of season 4 and asked if we could watch it again together. And I was like, yeah, fuck it, sure. So we started like, season 2 and went all the way through again.
I love it. I love it so hard.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That is. I discovered 2 seasons on this random streaming service called Pluto TV for free, but I rewatched a couple seasons of The Nanny recently because that was the only place that I could get like full episodes of The Nanny.
Okay, but
like,
Pluto TV is low-key great.
It really is though, because I'm about to like start, because they have like channel, obviously I don't have cable because, you know, like streaming services, but I realized that they had like different channels where you could watch classic comedy. So I definitely watched like the Carol Burnett show and like Mork and Mindy like recently because it was available. So anyway, yeah, I was very surprised. I think my Amazon Fire Stick was like, stream The Nanny, and I was like, where? That was my childhood. I loved that show growing up, and so I rewatched 2 full seasons of it, but now I have to see if I can find where else to stream the rest of it. So
I'm proud of you.
Thank you. I'm proud of me too. Chelsea, what about you? What are you rewatching?
I've recently started. I got the David Lean Directs Noel Coward Criterion box set. Uh-huh. So I'm working my way through Brief Encounter, in which we serve the Happy Breed and Blythe Spirit. So a bunch of old ass movies from whenever I was a youngin', because I'm canonically 125 years old as of today.
Did we up you to 125?
I'm 125 years old, yes.
You were only like 87 like a few weeks ago. So
I know, I mean, things have been happening.
What's time? 2021 is hit us harder. That's fun.
But yeah, it's a great little box set. I always recommend Brief Encounter to people. It's just a lovely little sad film, and I love a little bittersweet ending.
Very nice. Well, this has been an absolute blast. I am so glad that we got the chance to do this. Honestly, everyone watch Mythic Quest on Apple TV Plus on May 7th, second season. You can watch the first season right now. Do it.
Go do it.
Go do it. So thank you, Ashley. Thank you, Charlotte, so much.
Thank
for
you
being
so
here.
Much.
Thank you. So nice to meet you.
So nice to officially meet you.
It's been a treat.
Chelsea, as always, thanks so much for being here. And thank you to everyone for listening. And we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Community Rewatch podcast. We hope that you enjoyed today's episode. If you did, be sure to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts these days so you don't miss an episode. If you want to follow along with our content on social media, you can follow us at COMM Rewatch Pod on Twitter or at Community Rewatch on Instagram. Many, many thanks to Chelsea Eichels for putting together today's episode. We're so glad that you chose to go back to Greendale with us. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.